Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, exploring ideas to enhancing national competitiveness. In the second half of our show, I'd like to welcome my guest, David Walker, founder and CEO of the Comeback America Initiative and contributor to Governing to Win, enhancing national competitiveness through new policy and operating approaches. Dave, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
It's good to be with you.
Dave, America cannot understand its economic prospects without a clear understanding of what it means to be competitive. Would you define for us the term national competitiveness?
Competitiveness means the ability to compete effectively on a global basis. For example, from an economic standpoint in connection with world markets, you know, it's affected by many things, including our fiscal and monetary policy, our education system, how much we do in the area of research and development, the status of our critical infrastructure, healthcare costs, our tax system. So it's a very important and multidimensional issue.
Dave, you note in your piece that in order to restore fiscal sanity and achieve sustainable economic growth, many transformational changes will need to occur in the federal government. But I'd like you to highlight, why are we in the situation we're in today?
Well, candidly, I believe the federal government has grown too big, promised too much, and waited too long to restructure, but it's not too late. And one of the reasons that we are where we are today is because we've strayed from some of the key principles and values that were the basis of the founding of our nation and that helped to make us great. Things like limited but effective government, individual liberty and opportunity, personal responsibility and accountability, rule of law and equal justice under the law, fiscal responsibility and intergenerational equity, and the key concept of stewardship. In my view, we're violating all of these key principles and values today to differing degrees, and we need to come back to them in order to help create a better future.
Dave, to what extent has the time come for the government to be more future-focused, results-oriented, and more sustainable for the 21st century?
Well, unfortunately, the federal government is none of those things right now, and it's one of the reasons that we are where we are. Much of the federal government is based upon, you know, trends and conditions that existed in the world several decades ago. And once it ends up getting to the base of the federal government, whether it be a federal government organization, a spending program, a tax preference, or regulatory action, it tends to never go away. And so what the government does is it ends up, you know, piling on what it already has without focusing on those key elements, being more future-focused, results-oriented, successful and sustainable. And that's a key part of the need to basically transform what government does, how it does business, who does its business, and how it gets financed.
So, Dave, as we seek to restore fiscal sanity, you point out that a key dimension involves how best to address the cost drivers in government. Would you identify for our audience the cost drivers and elaborate on why it's critical to address them?
Well, there are a number of elements that are driving cost. I mean, for one thing, you have mandatory spending programs, which are things like entitlement programs. At least that's what they're referred to as, although they're really not entitlements. Things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, agricultural subsidies, things of that nature. And then you end up having other forms of mandatory spending. You also have backdoor spending, things like tax preferences, deductions, exemptions, credits, exclusions, that end up causing the federal government to forego revenue and have a very real cost. You also have a range of government guarantees that can cost money and a variety of government regulatory and other actions that clearly impose cost on the economy as well.
Dave, you note that the second largest government cost is tax expenditures. Would you outline why this is the case, and to what extent do these amounts differ from direct spending?
Well, actually, the largest government cost is direct spending, and yet tax expenditures are huge. For example, direct spending is about $3.8 trillion a year, of which about 63% of it is mandatory spending. And so, therefore, only about 37% of spending is really controlled, and that's going down. Tax expenditures represent about $1.1 trillion a year, and they're not controlled at all. These basically aren't in the budget. They're not in the financial statements. They're not subject to periodic review and reexamination, and they need to be treated just the same as direct spending, the same degree of scrutiny to make sure that they're working and that we're getting an appropriate return on investment.
Dave, while the above costs are generally easier to identify and estimate, there's another type of hidden government cost that is very important. What are these costs, and would you elaborate on how they are borne directly by the economy and by consumers as a whole?
Well, I think regulatory costs are clearly another type of burden that we have to look at. There's a tendency of government to regulate without rationalizing regulations over time. And therefore, you get layer on layer of regulation. Many times, they're very thick, they're very complicated, and unfortunately, all too many occasions, they're not enforced. And so just as we need to do in our tax system to make it simpler, fairer, more competitive, more equitable, and to enforce the tax law, we need to just do the same thing with regard to our regulatory policy. We need to engage in a fundamental review and reexamination of that to make sure that it makes sense for the 21st century.
Dave, I'd like to know more about you and how you came to contribute to this new book, Governing to Win. Would you tell us more about yourself?
Well, I've got an unusual background in that I've had leadership positions in the public sector, the private sector, and the not-for-profit sector. I've had three presidential appointments with Senate confirmation from presidents of both political parties and confirmed by the Senate when it was controlled by different parties. I've also run a worldwide line of business for a major global consulting and accounting firm. And I've also now run two nonprofits. Basically, I've focused on the future. I've focused on achieving transformational change, no matter what position that I've been in. And Lord knows the federal government needs transformational change. But quite frankly, many state and local governments do too.
Dave, let's review the various types of spending in more detail. In the case of direct federal spending, would you elaborate on the two types of spending? What do they entail, and how do they differ?
There are two major types of direct spending, mandatory spending and discretionary spending. Mandatory spending represents spending on programs that, based upon current law, need to be met, and they're not subject to an annual limit. Discretionary spending represents federal spending on programs that are subject to annual limits and appropriations bills promulgated by the Congress and signed by the President. Interestingly, while at the beginning of the Republic, everything other than interest was deemed to be discretionary spending, today, you know, that's shrunk down to about 37% of the budget, and it's continuing to shrink. Ironically, discretionary spending includes all of the express and enumerated responsibilities envisioned by the founders for the federal government, all investments in our future, and all investments in children. And so what's happening is not only has the budget gotten bigger, but we've lost control of the budget. More and more the budget is on autopilot. More and more is for consumption and seniors. Less and less is controlled and is for investment and for young people. And that is not a prescription for prosperity in the future.
And so, Dave, there's a lot of concern about the annual deficit and mounting federal debt. These are not the biggest challenges, as you point out. What are the biggest challenges in your mind?
Well, from a fiscal standpoint, a lot of people are concerned about current deficits and debt levels, and understandably so. But the real challenge is not where we are, not where we've been, but where we're headed. We have huge unfunded obligations for Medicare, for Social Security. We face a range of other commitments and contingencies, you know, dealing with housing and other types of guarantees that are much, much greater than the amount of, you know, debt and liabilities that we have right now. So we need to start focusing on the future and recognizing that we're on an imprudent and unsustainable path and that we're going to have to make changes. The sooner we make those changes, the better, so that we can avoid a U.S. debt crisis, so that we can phase in the changes, and so that we can get the power of compounding working for us rather than against us as it is now.
Dave, as a follow-up, I want to understand the total federal liabilities and unfunded obligations amount. What assumptions factored into arriving at this total that you highlight in your piece, and how much would it cost each citizen?
Well, liabilities are things like the debt held by the public, the accrued obligations for military and civilian pensions and retiree health care, and a range of other traditional liabilities. And those numbers are large. And in fact, if you consider current liabilities and you consider current federal assets, you know, the U.S. government actually has a negative net worth. But the real problem is what you don't see on the balance sheet, the unfunded obligations for Social Security, for Medicare, and other commitments and contingencies that are multiple times greater. As of September 30, 2011, which is the last year that we have audited financial statements, based on reasonable assumptions, the total liabilities and unfunded promises were about $65.5 trillion. You know, that's over $500,000 per household, and it's growing, based upon recent estimates, by over $10 million a minute.
Dave, would you tell us more about the key recommendations made in the Bowles-Simpson Debt Commission that, if pursued, would put the nation on a path to fiscal sustainability?
Well, there are a number of positive things about the Bowles-Simpson Commission recommendations that are shared by other commissions like Domenici-Rivlin and many other groups, including the Comeback America Initiative's proposals. First, they recognize that we need to focus on debt as a percentage of the economy. That's really the key metric. We need to get that down to a reasonable and sustainable level. They recognize that given the magnitude of our challenge, that everything's going to have to be on the table. Reimposing budget controls, reforming social insurance programs, rationalizing and better controlling health care promises and cost, reducing defense and other spending, and engaging in comprehensive tax reform that will achieve a number of objectives, including generate more revenues. They understand the difference between the short-term challenge and the structural challenge, and the need to make sure that you address both in an integrated and coordinated fashion. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of positive things about the framework of Simpson-Bowles, although you can debate, you know, individual elements.
So, Dave, what can be done to avoid a debt crisis? And more particularly, does this require budget reforms that reimpose tight controls?
I believe that it is imperative that we make meaningful progress in calendar 2013 in order to avoid a U.S. debt crisis. That doesn't mean that we're going to solve the problem in 2013, but it means things like reimposing tough budget controls that are phased in as appropriate so that we don't undercut the economic recovery in our efforts to try to get unemployment down and underemployment down. It means round one of social insurance reforms. It means relooking at health care to start rationalizing our promises and focusing more on cost control. It means reducing defense and other spending without compromising national security or shredding our social safety net. And it means comprehensive tax reform that will make the system simpler, fairer, more competitive, and more equitable, and yet generate more revenues. We need to make meaningful progress through a so-called grand bargain in 2013. I believe that can happen if the president leads, whoever the president is, in 2013, and if the American people put pressure on their elected officials to act for the interest of the country rather than that elected official's personal or political party's interest.
How does the U.S. compare with other nations, and what about the Comeback America Initiative? We will explore these questions and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.